and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton. With me, as always, is Leo Sun. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. It feels like it's been a minute since I've seen you. The Wolves have somehow only played two games seemingly in the last week here. But I want to start it off by saying happy Cesar Chavez Day. I had the day off today here in California on this Monday when we're recording right now. So I enjoyed the day off with my wife. And just want to take a minute. I mean, her family's worked in agriculture here in California. So it's always a great day to kind of reflect and think about those that have and continue to sacrifice their well-being to support our country, especially with our everyday needs and meals and things like that. So definitely a big thank you to all those, you know, especially you listeners who continue to put in the thankless hard work, and shout out to unions and workers' rights as well too. It's a great holiday to be able to celebrate. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Speaking of California, I don't know if you saw the piece with J.J. Redick, just kind of him going over the devastation of Palisades and his rental home that he lost in the fires. And just like he said something like, I hope I can be the Lakers coach for 15, 20 years. And even if I'm not, I'm going to be here. So yeah, just kind of reminded me of that. I am poor in not remembering what that piece is from, but it was a good piece about your home state.
Yeah, it's always something to think about where, I actually want to hop into this later on, but I'll save some of my thoughts for then, but definitely just thinking about things being bigger than basketball, and how obviously, you know, today is a day that we can think about that, but also just about who we are as people in terms of the basketball sphere, how we can use some of our influence to try to impact that. I mean, clearly J.J. Redick is, you know, the hotbed of the Hollywood Lakers, you know, new coach and LeBron and Luka and all that. But at the end of the day, it's still most important to him to take care of his family and to take care of not just his family, but the community as well too. So it's really great to kind of see that refocus a bit and think outside a little bit of just, okay, well, what seed are we going to be in on this random Monday when there's still a week or two left of the season?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess a hard transition here into the basketball side of it all. The Wolves beat the Pistons. It was an incredibly weird game. I was trying to think about weird games I've been to or covered, and I think this one might have been second behind the Rudy Gobert, Jaden McDaniels punch game where they beat New Orleans on the last game of the season. It wasn't quite that weird, but certainly an interesting night. Seven people get ejected from the game after a fight in the second quarter, including two coaches, Pablo Prigioni and Pistons head coach J.B. Bickerstaff, as well as five players, Nazari and Dante DiVincenzo for the Wolves. And I gotta even remember, it was Isaiah Stewart, Ron Holland, and Marcus Sasser for the Pistons. So crazy game. Obviously, the Pistons were already shorthanded. Jaden Ivey's been out for the season, and then they didn't have Tobias Harris and Cade Cunningham in the game, so the fight left them even further shorthanded. But I guess first topic, howl or foul. It was good to see the Wolves show some fight, literally with the altercation and kind of with the on the court coming back from a 14-point first quarter deficit against the Pistons. Howl or foul, Leo?
Oh, man. I mean, I'll start with my choice on this as a howl. I mean, the Rockets game, I think it was a couple months ago, where Dylan Brooks was kind of clamping up Anthony Edwards and just talking a lot of trash. And that's a great example of a team trying to punk the Timberwolves or playing really physical and push them around. And you saw how that game turned out, right? Anthony Edwards responded really well, and they battled back and won. And now with this game, obviously, it was to even more extreme degree of literally fighting on the court instead of just a typical basketball fight. I mean, I don't want to say you saw punches thrown, but definitely there were some scratches and grabs being made, which I'll talk about later as well too. And so it's really interesting to kind of see. So I was watching this game, I was catching up, I was coming back, and I missed the first half of the game. And so I had it recorded, and so I was kind of skipping forward, and I was like, all right, by the time I catch up, it'll probably be the fourth quarter. And as I was going through, and once we hit the fight, I was like, holy crap, like this whole second quarter, I think Grady and Jim Pete pointed out, I think it took about an hour for that second quarter alone. And so by the time I caught up to the game, like, we were only just halfway through the game. So it's kind of wild to think about. And yeah, at the end of the day, you don't want to see them physically fight out there. I mean, there's a lot of layers to why you never want to see players fighting out there, especially in the NBA. But, you know, sometimes they're asking for it. And Isaiah Stewart and Ron Holland, I've watched a lot of Pistons games, as probably a lot of Wolves fans have this year because of the whole draft pick situation. But they've always been angling to try and start shit with like any other opponent. So it's not just specific to the Timberwolves. They've always been kind of asking for it. And, you know, I'm not surprised to see Naz Reid and Dante. I mean, those are two of the more kind of fiery kind of dudes that stood up to it and really started to throw some hands there. So, you know, we're right here recording Monday evening here, and there hasn't been any word of any suspensions that's been handed out. We were talking off air about how there's probably going to be some fines, but we still haven't even heard about that. So as we're kind of fighting in the standings right here, hopefully it doesn't get, you know, handed down that they're going to miss a big game against the Nuggets tomorrow, whatever the case may be. I will say, yeah, it was good to see them battle back because that first quarter was really, really bad. So that energy did not look good. So, I love to see the fight. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm actually going to say foul for the reason you just kind of said there, is that I wanted to see that fight, not literally fight. I wanted to see the better energy from the start of the game. And it, again, it's frustrating that it took the other team needling them to the point of, I mean, do we want to? I thought Detroit was kind of more the aggressor originally when the whole thing started. Clearly, Isaiah Stewart didn't like Dante yelling at him, F no, when he took a long floater. Took exception to that, got a tech, and then game seconds later, the fight happens. So I think both teams obviously share in the blame for what happened, but Finch said after the game, like, he felt like a lot of it was coming from there. And then also I thought the refs did a very poor job of kind of containing that. They were calling very few fouls. Both teams were being aggressive, probably the Pistons more than the Wolves, and they just weren't calling a lot of those fouls. And then when it got aggressive, I didn't think they did a very good job. I mean, once people start shoving and pushing, there's not much you can do, but like before that, I didn't think they did a good job kind of containing it or preventing it or whatever. But yeah, I just, from what I saw, if that fight doesn't happen, or if the Pistons just kind of leave the Wolves alone, the Pistons are going to roll through that game, or it'd have been another classic. They get down, tie the game, but then can't close it. It felt like we were trending towards that game until the fight happens. And the other aspect of it is just like, I do expect some suspensions to happen. I don't have any knowledge more than anyone else. To be honest, if you were watching on TV, you had a better angle of it than I did. But I just think the biggest thing is it spilled into the crowd, and there was a young kid that kind of got tussled into it and a few adults. And so like, if it was just at center court or whatever, I think they would just go with the ejections and some fines and move on. But the fact that it got into the crowd, I think, is going to be an issue. I don't know what extent. Would 2, 3, 4 games for Dante be excessive? I don't know. It's certainly possible. Is it? I don't know. It'd be speculating how many games. Obviously, like if you're looking at the Wolves schedule, you don't want someone suspended more than 3 games, because yeah, it would stink to be missing people for Denver. But like the next 2 games after that are Brooklyn and Philly, 2 games that you can hopefully get away with missing a player or two. But if you're missing players from Milwaukee, although Milwaukee hasn't looked all that great, and they're not going to have Dame and who knows Giannis' status or whatever, but well, they have Obi Toppin, the Obi Toppin of Milwaukee, Kyle Kuzma. So that aside, I thought the fight kind of took away from the bigger story to me of the first half, which was the Wolves did it again. And it's at the point that you kind of expect these slow starts or energy or what have you, especially when the other team is not very, the Pistons are good, but they're not very talented without their top guys, which is the case for everyone. I just think that was the bigger frustration. And honestly, we can talk about like, did the fight change that? Or did the fact that the Pistons were then missing 6 rotation players after the fight, including the 3 injured, Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham, and Tobias, the injured guys, those 3 plus the 3 got ejected. So it was like, yeah, the best 2 players ejected were the Wolves. But the Wolves didn't even change their rotation. They just kind of increased the guys that were playing. They just like, okay, Jalen Clark gets a few more minutes, Nog gets a few more minutes, Mike plays a little bit more. Like, it didn't even affect the rotation. Meanwhile, the Pistons are throwing out Simone Fontecchio for 25 minutes. So, yeah. I just, I was more frustrated by the first half, and the fight is what it is.
Yeah, it's Malik Beasley did everything that he could to try and get the Wolves fired up for this. I mean, he was talking trash right from the very first three that he hit, and credit to him. I mean, he almost had an all-time revenge game there for the Pistons. At least it was shaping up that way in the first half. I mean, I think he hit something crazy, like at least five, or I think he hit all six maybe of his threes. Yeah,
six threes in the first half.
Yeah, in the first half, and he didn't make a single one after that in the second half. But he also, you know, shout out Malik Beasley. He also, when we played the Pistons in January, he also put up 23 points, also hit six threes as well, too, and that was in a victory. So, you know, I think there's still a soft spot that some Wolves fans, myself included, that do have for him, but he got trolled pretty hard afterwards. And obviously, when it came to throw hands, he wasn't really interested in doing that. But yeah, you know, I do agree with you that that first half, especially that first quarter start, was really, really tough looking. It's like, oh man, like here we go. Yeah, we, like you said, here we go again. You know, we beat the Suns. It's like, all right, that's a get right game. And immediately we just kind of tumble back over. But, you know, at the end of the day, all that counts is the wins and losses, and they got another win there. And I think it really does show for teams that are really trying to, you know, don't try the Wolves like that. I mean, the Wolves will beat themselves if you let them. Like, just don't roll out your best players. Like, don't talk trash to them. Just let them kind of, like, they'll extinguish themselves. You know, we've seen more often than not the Wolves do that. It's kind of turnover and lay over and just kind of give it up. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, it's one of those things in the playoffs, the intensity does rise. There is a lot more physicality. There is a lot more kind of, you know, personal vendettas kind of going back and forth, one-on-one battles, a lot of trash talking. And so, I mean, hopefully, if anything, if there's a silver lining, is that that seems to really motivate the Wolves. So hopefully we have that to look forward to. But yeah, it is one of those, like, yeah, bad in the beginning, but ended up being good. But, you know, there's always kind of an asterisk with that.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I feel about the playoffs, is like a lot. There are certainly issues that they've seen all season that will carry over into the postseason, or at least they'll need to fix it. But like the energy level, I just kind of don't expect it to be an issue like it is. They still have like lineup issues with the starters and spacing and all, and late game execution will obviously be the biggest thing that determines how far they can go. But even the rest of the season, like it's, I guess, like I talked about Milwaukee, that's like another opportunity for a trap game if like Giannis misses a game, or even if he doesn't. Like, that's, the Bucks have not been playing well. It's a team that the Wolves should be able to beat at this point in the season. Memphis is tumbling. Denver, they don't have a game left on the schedule that, like, when you play Cleveland or something, where you just go, yeah, if they lose tonight, oh well. I mean, I guess, like, if you play hard and lose to Denver, it is what it is. But like, they either have like solid playoff teams that they're playing on the road, or they have teams that would like to lose the basketball game. So they don't like the Pistons obviously weren't talented last night with their guys, but they were trying to win the basketball game, where Brooklyn's not, Philly's not, and Utah's not. That's more than half of your schedule is those teams. So obviously we talk about just them doing bad against lesser teams or whatever. I would point to the second game against New Orleans, where Zion plays, or Zion doesn't play, and they crush him. So,
yeah, that's the goal. And our goal is hopefully that we won't hear any mention of Groundhog's Day again, because as soon as you hear that, I immediately think about you and quoting Chris Finch about, you know, Groundhog's Day. Like, so Groundhog's Day again.
I had that halfway through that game. I had that quote queued up. I bookmarked it. I had it ready to go.
Yeah. I felt it. I was literally that present too.
Literally right before the fight, I was ready to like quote tweet it and be like, I better not have to tweet this out at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And I guess I didn't. How they got to that point was certainly interesting. I don't know. Do you have an idea of what guys will be suspended? I think Dante will get a couple games.
Well, low hanging fruit is Isaiah Stewart for sure is going to get some games.
Yeah.
Because of the reputation and everything.
I agree. I also just kind of don't care about what the Pistons. I mean,
sure. So
the Pistons are like
the Wolves, yeah.
It's kind of funny. The Pistons, Wolves probably kind of want them to lose, like pick wise at this point, because like they're going to make the playoffs. They're so far above seven. So, yeah.
I mean, if I had to guess, I mean, Dante maybe gets a game, I assume. But I don't think there's anyone else. I mean, he would be the only one on the Wolves that kind of get the game, because Nas didn't really. I mean, he started by kind of pointing at him, but he didn't do any shoving. You know, he kind of ended up on the bottom of the pile, if I remember correctly. So I don't think Nas will get anything. So if anything, it'd be you know, Dante maybe getting one. And then, yeah, like you said, with the Pistons, you know, probably Isaiah Stewart, but I don't know if anyone else will. So, yeah, I mean, so say Dante misses a game, then, you know, that's going to call on other players to step up. And the Wolves have shown this year that some of the other players are willing to step up when the time comes. And one of those players is someone that's been starting ever since Dante went out with the injury, which was Mike Conley. Mike Conley played exactly 30 minutes in each of the last two games, which were double-digit wins. Both those games, he led the team plus-minus. He was a plus, I think, 24 and 26, I believe. And our next topic for Howl or Foul is Mike Conley should continue playing a large role as a starter. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think it's matchup dependent. But in the general idea, I think Howl, like, he's just been fantastic of late. I do think he's gotten healthier as the season has gone on. He's been playing like close to 20 minutes a night on most nights. They've been sitting him on a lot of back-to-backs. I thought they did a good job sitting him. When they played, I think, I should remember, but like they played Utah on like the front end. Oh, that's what they played Utah on the front end of the back to back. They sat Mike knowing that we can get this game without Mike. Yeah, I just think Mike's been fantastic. Starting to see that pick and roll game with Rudy start to pick up again, which is always something they go to, the floor general aspect of it. Certainly, they've been playing teams where it's easier to hide. Mike defensively, Phoenix isn't a team, especially without Beal, that doesn't present a tough matchup for Mike. And certainly Detroit without Cade and Tobias, there is always a person to hide on Mike. And they kind of had him guard Malik in the second half, had him running around screens, and he did a fantastic job there. So I'm howling him playing 30 minutes a night. In the playoffs, I would probably say less so, just because there's going to be, like, we've seen him have trouble guarding if they play Houston. Denver's probably a matchup that you can have him guard Christian Brown and feel okay about it. I'm just thinking about other life. If they play the Lakers, that's an extremely tough matchup for him. I'm not sure who he guards there. Yeah, it's kind of their playoff, the three playoff teams they could come up against. But, yeah, I just think I've been, and certainly his hand has gotten, that was a big thing with the shooting. His shooting's been fantastic, which when the Wolves play a lot of non-shooters or streaky shooters, so they need their point guard to be able to knock down a lot of three-point shots, and so his hand and wrists have gotten better. So yeah, I'm howling him playing as much as possible.
Yeah, I like what you said about depending on the matchup. And, you know, if we kind of zoom back into the media for, like, you know, day-to-day right now, I mean, say Dante misses a game, then, you know, Mike's obviously he's already been starting. He's already been playing about 30 minutes a game recently, exactly. And so we'll need him to continue to provide that, especially as a floor spacer, because, like you said, he is shooting better. So for me, I am also going Howl for this one as well, too. This may be the coolest take of all time, the most cold take of all time, but it's a Howl until it's not. Maybe he's finally getting healthy, like you said, that wrist or that hand injury that he had his fingers, I think. Maybe it's a possibility of him being accustomed to his new role with Ant and Julius Randle handling the ball a lot more. But whatever the case is, you got to ride it while you can. And there's plenty of other levers to pull if he is being hunted on defense at this point. We do know that Jalen Clark can be, you know, I say this with a grain of salt, but reliable, at least in terms of his offensive role. Like, okay, well, he knows where he's going to do. He's going to try not to hurt you. He's going to take the shots that he needs to. He's going to play outstanding defense. I mean, you have that to throw in. You have Nikhil, who's starting to do a bit better as a lead ball handler as well, too, bringing the ball up and pushing it ahead. I think it was Netglow, I think, or on Blue Sky and on Twitter. He does, like, play-by-play breakdowns for the Wolves, like just little clips. And he showed one clip of Dennis Schroeder really hounding Nikhil. I think it was in the second half, hounding him full court. And it's one of those that we've seen so often this season where Nikhil just gets picked, gets his pocket picked by the time he crosses half court. And this time he was facing Dennis Schroeder, who's a really, really annoying defender, for better or worse. And Nikhil just pushed it right through and went all the way to the rim. And I think he either scored or dumped it off for an easy score. And I think that's, you know, indicative of someone that could really step up and say that, you know, Mike is not having a good game. And so, yeah, I wrote that on my same notes as well, too, is that if he is being hunted on defense, like we saw so much this season earlier, then, you know, you'll have to pull those other levers. But I agree, Mike is playing outstanding right now. He's shooting the ball great. He's doing all the little things. And he's just one of those consistent players that we need on a team with players that sometimes are not very consistent. So yeah, it's really great to have him out there.
Yeah, I do remember the possession you're talking about with Nikhil and Schroeder. Because that was like right in front of me, and I just remember thinking, like, foul. That's a foul.
Right.
And it wasn't that night. It's not a ref thing. Like, they just weren't calling those type of ticky-tack fouls, which is honestly probably a good thing just in general. But, yeah, and Nikhil did a great job just going right around him eventually and getting to the hoop. And I just kind of remember, like, as much as we want players to guard the whole court, it's like, well, that's kind of why. Because, like, the minute you don't get, like, you're out of position even by a half step, now you're playing 4-on-5, which NBA teams are fantastic at exploiting that. So, yeah, the Wolves, Mike's the only, like, true point guard on the roster. Obviously, Dante plays a little bit there. Nikhil does. Even, like, Randall has ball playmaking responsibilities. But, yeah, they need Mike to be – they don't need him to be necessarily what he was last year, but certainly a competent piece of the offense. And just kind of with everything, like, if it's a Mike Conley game, roll with him. But if it's not, I think they, like – go with Dante, go with Nikhil, go with a bigger lineup. Just really, I like, that'll be the biggest thing. And I think they did it during last playoffs, just being willing to be flexible with the starting lineup. Because a lot of times during the season, it's been like, well, why'd you go with Mike? It's like, well, Mike's won a lot of basketball games. It's like, okay, but he hasn't been good this year. And it's good to see that turn around.
Yeah, I also just we mentioned Nikhil. We got to give him a shout out. He has had some of the craziest finishes in these last two games. I mean, he had one where he looked like it was the old Dr. J type of highlight where he went under the hoop and he kind of threw up this wild, like, reverse, I think it was an and-one layup that curled in. And another night, I think it was against Phoenix, where he shot the one fading out of bounds. And, like, I think the top of the backboard is and went in as well, too. So Nikhil's been finishing some crazy shots. And, you know, I'm not depending on that every night, but I do have to give him his flowers for just the amount that he's been stepping up, because his three-pointer has not been falling at the rate that we've been used to seeing earlier in the season. So he's finding other ways to contribute on offense. So that's big if it continues to hold.
I agree. Another player that's been fantastic, Rudy Gobert, has been dominant. Last four games, averaging 16.8 points per game, hitting 2/3 of his shots from the field, and 16.3 rebounds per game, including 5.5 on the offensive end. Just dominant stuff, especially to me, these last two games against teams that don't necessarily have a matchup for him, especially once Isaiah Stewart is no longer in the game, even if Stewart was in the game, but he's just dominant. Like, last night, 28 rebounds, or 25 rebounds, his career high is 28. Just was grabbing everything, doing everything the Wolves needed. So my question, Leo, howl or foul, Rudy's new gear is anywhere close to sustainable?
I'm going howl on this as well, too. I don't know if it's optimism in me, but yeah, I mean, the way that Rudy's been playing recently is just amazing. I mean, in my notes for both games, I just wrote, like, Rudy he's playing hard, he's active, and eventually I just wrote, like, Rudy is everywhere. In that Phoenix game in the third quarter, I mean, he was rebounding, he was cleaning up possessions. He even blocked Kevin Durant's jump shot at one point as well, too. He's one of two players. Jaden also blocked KD on a fadeaway jump shot. I mean, how often do you see him even get blocked once in a game on a jumper? So, yeah, I mean, he's been playing great, and I think though those numbers that you mentioned are audacious numbers to keep pace with, he seems fully over those back spasms, whatever's going on. And I think at one point, you know, a lot of fans, myself included, was wondering, like, man, what's going on? I mean, back spasms, he's been out for like a week. You know, he's missed a lot of games now. And it just goes to show, I mean, the medical staff clearly know what they're doing more than us fans or even those of us that cover the game, where his energy just seems so much better when he's out there. How much have we been asking for all season where it's like, dude, like, go get the freaking rebound, or like, go try and block the shot, stop standing there. And it seems like he's been the complete opposite of that. We're getting the Rudy that we saw last year, quite frankly. And there's no reason to believe that he can't keep this up with this type of energy. I mean, knock on wood, unless something else flares up again with him. But yeah, he's just been absolutely spectacular playing. You got to give him kudos for that. I mean, he's dominated both games. And yeah, like you said, matchup maybe dependent, but Jalen Duren's not a small guy either. And he absolutely played Jalen Duren off the floor as well, too. And again, I know Pistons are missing other players. And yeah, Jalen Duren on the island by himself isn't maybe going to do anything. But again, just eye test wise, even if you just look at the way Rudy's moving out there, just looks so much better. So yeah, I'm a howl for that.
Yeah, I certainly, similar to Mike, been able to get healthy as of late. I think the whole Wolves roster is as healthy as you get in late March. And like we talked about the rebounding, but the defense is back to defensive player of the year level. He's obviously not going to win the award. Draymond might podcast his way to it if he can play the rest of the games to hit the games quota. But Rudy Gobert's been the past few games of the past since he's gotten fully healthy has looked as dominant as ever, and that's what the Wolves need. The Wolves team, they're obviously not quite as good defensively as last year, and their offense is significantly better than last year, but they're still a defensive, like they're going to win games with defense primarily, and kind of look to find other, their offense has improved compared to last year, but anytime you have Rudy Gobert, your team is going to be a defensive led team. And so for him to get back to that and for Jaden to have another solid defensive game, didn't have him in the notes here, but I thought his game, at least in the second half, was encouraging. He only has 2 points, but he has 9 rebounds. And at this point, how well Jaden plays is kind of just up to the rebounds. But to go back to Rudy, just exactly what they need from him. And they were involving him in the offense, which is always like the biggest thing. It didn't feel like his presence out there was causing them the offense to sink. He obviously had a lot of putback dunks, but they were one possession I really remembered as he missed a, he had like a wide open, not a wide open layup, but it was like him going dribbling down the lane, and he had Schroeder in front of him and he bricks a layup like you've seen him do. And the next possession down, Ant hit him again in the same short roll pass, and like that was like one of the biggest things to me. I was like, boom, there you go. And is always like clearly like doesn't at least in the past hasn't trust Rudy with that. So to see Ant hit him with the same pass after he blew a layup that most players would make over a smaller defender, that was the biggest thing. Because I know like it looks ugly when the bad plays happen, but when Rudy, you just gotta hit him when he's open, because he does more often than not make the right play, even if it looks goofy, even if it looks funky, and even if it doesn't go to an assist from him, because it just keeps the ball moving. If the player in the like if he kicks to the corner, that player almost always makes the right decision after that, whether it's putting up an open shot, driving to the lane, or swinging the ball to the next open player. Like it, the offense looks so much better when they're just hitting Rudy Gobert in the short roll, because teams are not gonna stop blitzing Ant, and the only way to maybe get them to stop blitzing him is to find success hitting Rudy. And they did that in this Pistons game. Obviously, the Pistons were far from their full strength, but doing it against any NBA opponent, I think, is huge.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, Ryan. I do be getting worried sometimes where Rudy's feeling himself a little bit beyond the arc, and he catches the ball for a handoff, and he'd be doing these, like, no-look behind-the-back drop-offs or, like, through his legs. Or it's like, relax, man, relax. you're not Domantas Sabonis out here or Nikola Jokic. Or just, you know, calm down. But, no, absolutely, he has been playing better, and we'll talk about Ant here in a second. But even in the Phoenix game, when the Wolves really, really pulled away in that second half, Ant hit him on two beautiful dimes I distinctly remember as well, too. One was, I think the first one was a lob to Rudy, and it was after, like, he came off a double team. They showed on the screen up top, and he found Rudy on a lob. And the next one, same thing. Rudy in the roll, pressure release, Ant finds him with, like, a laser of a pass, and Rudy gets an easy dunk. That was, like, two possessions within, I think, like, 3 or 4 possessions in a row for the Wolves that Ant found him there. So, yeah, I think that's really encouraging, and everyone knows. I think that's, like, the unspoken rules that you have to get Rudy involved, because once you do, he's just so much more activated on defense. And I know on paper, it shouldn't be like that. You're paying this guy a lot of money. He's a multiple time defensive player of the year. He should be able to play elite defense without needing the ball in offense, but that's just human nature. I mean, if you're involved on both sides of the floor, then your overall energy picks up. I mean, you see it with other players as well, too. You see that with Julius Randle. You see him get pumped up when he's scoring some buckets on offense. He's getting back on his horse on defense and making some crazy hustle play. Same with Ant. When he's feeling himself, he really ramps up his one-on-one defense as well, too. So, you know, I think with Rudy, it's the same thing.
Yeah, and I just think Rudy's done a good job, like, just offensively by himself has done a good job. There haven't been as many kind of brick layups. I know I talked about the one around Schroeder, but he's done a good job when he's kind of gotten the ball down in the post. He's done a good job, like, pump faking to get people off of him, going up strong. Like, that's just my thing with him when he has, like, just go up and try to dunk the ball. There's no need to throw up a layup. If you get fouled, that's fine. You're going to make it at, I don't know, what is he, 70%? That's 1.2 4 points per possession. That's great. So just like go up strong. None of the layups, and I think he's done a good job there. And obviously, like last night, 10 offensive rebounds is just dominant. To go along with 15 defensive rebounds. So,
last thing I gotta say, Ryan, about Rudy before we move to the next subject here is it was a fantasy basketball championship in my family and friends league, and I was playing against Rudy, a manager that had Rudy Gobert, and the final deciding factor was gonna be rebounds. And like, no, I ended up winning because like he had Cade on his team. He had a lot of other players that were resting. But so I thought I had it in the bag, but with every Rudy rebound the last two games, I'm like, what the hell? Where's his rebounding been like all season? And had Rudy actually made one more free throw, he would have won free throw percentage for the other guy. And he would have been like three rebounds short. But anyways, yeah, Rudy was actively trying to like take my team down in fantasy, but luckily I walked away with first place trophy there. But yeah, I mean, shout out Rudy, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not even sure Rudy's been that productive of a fantasy basketball player this year, but good. I guess good on that manager for holding them. So it didn't quite pull through.
Yeah.
Last foul or foul topic. Anthony Edwards had a very slow start to the Pistons game. Only had 5 points in the first half, but came out and as pretty much led the Wolves to the win. Had 20 points in the third quarter. Finally started hitting some long distance shots, started hitting some just any shots at all. He said after the game that he got his stitches out right after the game ended. He said it was 5 minutes before he talked to us. He said he got the stitches out. And then he, when asked like what was the difference between the first half and second half, he said, well, I took the bandages off. So he was tired of those. So hopefully that means his shooting woes are kind of behind him. But Leo, what do you think, how or foul, that third quarter is indicative of what he can do the rest of the way?
The only reason I'm going to go with foul on this, Ryan, is that because also I think in that same post-game presser after the game on Sunday, he said that he knows what needs to be done and that he's dedicated to playing, quote, the right way instead of just trying to go out and deciding that, hey, I'm going to try and get 40 or 50. And he might say that. I mean, we know Anthony Edwards. We know how he is and what type of basketball he likes playing. But at the end of the day, when he's saying that, it's obviously cognizant that whether it's him reflecting or his teammates or probably the coaches getting to him saying like, hey, man, like, we need you to play the right way. We need you to get Rudy involved. We need you to do this. We need you to do that. And yeah, it's great to see him because, I mean, we can't take Ant as a scorer away. But I don't think that he's gonna go for these huge quarters. Now, it's possible that he will do this every now and then, but I don't think he'll play this way the rest of the way. I do think that, especially against some of these other teams that we have coming up, like, it's about getting everyone else up to speed. I think Ant realizes that, like, in order for me to get to where I want to go this year, I need all my teammates with me on this. And he needs Julius to get the ball. He needs Rudy to play well on offense so he can bring that defense. He needs Dante to shoot well. He needs Mike to shoot well. He needs Jaden to be involved. I think he's understanding that. And hopefully he's turning a corner with that. So that's the only reason I'm saying foul. But it's crazy to think about that. We think Ant's in a slump. And I look back at his game logging, shot 4 of 10 yesterday from 3. And against Phoenix, he also shot 4 of 10. So, I mean, that's 40% is a good mark for the volume that he's shooting. I think he's shooting 10 threes a game right now in the last two. So, yeah, I'm going to say foul that he's not going to be blazing for, you know, 20-point quarters here, but I do think that he is going to play the right way.
Yeah, I'm going to go howl just in the sense of the shooting woes that happened. They were kind of before the Phoenix game where he had 2 1-for-11 from three games, both the two Indiana games and the New Orleans loss. He didn't shoot well either. I think that had a lot to do with the stitches or the hand injury, and it's fair to criticize. And then why were you shooting so many 3-pointers? I think that's a fair criticism, but I think that'll kind of be behind them, and we'll get back to. I mean, it's always to be seen if they can kind of cobble together whatever energy level they need for a game, because they've just been so inconsistent that they've admitted to that themselves. So, but at the very least, I think we can expect the Anthony Edwards that we've seen the past 70-something games this year.
So, Ryan, there's 7 games left for the Timberwolves right now. And for the Pistons, they currently have, let me just double check here, they also have 7 games as well, too. Now, Malik Beasley currently leads the NBA in most 3-pointers made for this season. He's at 292. The Ant is 5 behind him at 287. You got to imagine that some words were exchanged about that during the last game. I mean, Malik got off 6 of them, but Ant still kept pretty close pace with 4. And it's curious to see. I mean, Ant is most likely going to hit 300 threes, which is going to be crazy. I think he'd be just the fifth or sixth player in NBA history to have 300 threes. But, you know, at this rate, so is Malik Beasley. He's also going to hit 300 threes. So that's just a fun little battle, a little connection that we have going on. But, yeah, I think Ant needs to continue being aggressive for sure, because we've seen that a tentative Ant is not necessarily a great thing. I think for him being aggressive, oftentimes we think, oh, well, he's got to be jacking three-pointer, he's got to be attacking the rim. But no, I mean, we saw he could be aggressive with his passing as well, too. Get the double, move the ball, right? So hopefully he'll continue to be aggressive the rest of the way.
Yeah, and one last note with Ant is he did pick up a tech in this game, so his next technical foul will be a suspension. So if he does want to pass up Malik for that three-point title, another tech would probably make that a lot more difficult. I guess it would be to be seen if he can avoid that. I thought last night it was pretty, like, I could see it coming that he was going to pick one up. He tried to, like, the refs were passing the ball to each other, and he briefly tried to steal it during that. I was like, what, he had, like, that's gonna be an immediate tech, and he just, like, wouldn't let it go, whatever he was saying. Someone drew a charge on Dante. I hate the charge rule. I just think it's so poorly. This has been a thing for me. One of the charges, Ant's charge that he got, which isn't what he was complaining about, when he gathers the ball, there's no defender there. And when he goes up, the guy's there. Like, that, you got to change it. So you got to be there on the gather, not up, not the upper shooter motion. Cause, like, I don't know. That's we don't need to go there. I'm arguing with the book.
There's too much gray area, even the way that's called from ref to ref and game to game. I agree with you. It's a dumb rule that just is so inconsistent. And that's, I think, the most maddening part. And I think the worst part actually is how dangerous it is too. Like, how many players you see getting hurt by it. So
yeah, I don't like being rewarded for getting in the way. Obviously, like, offensive fouls need to be a thing to a certain extent, but, like, especially like the slide under charges are really tough. But we'll leave that be. Next segment, Apex Alpha, leader of the pack this week. We'll go quick with mine because we already talked about it. Rudy Gobert, just very impressive last couple games, and they're going to need him in the playoffs and hopefully down the stretch of the season to get out of the play-in tournament. So really impressive play from him. Your Apex Alpha, Leo.
Yeah, my Apex Alpha is going to be someone we didn't really talk about yet today, which is Mr. Julius Randle. There's such a big difference in the way that Julius is perceived, not even just by fans, but even on the basketball court, that when he's engaged and involved versus when he isn't. And this isn't even just, on this game, he's like this, or on that game, on this night, he's like this. It's even within a game. You look at that one Detroit game, and I try to cherry pick some stats just from the Detroit game, right? In the first quarter, the Wolves fell down by, what was it, 14, I think it was. In that quarter, he played almost 10 minutes, and he was 1-for-5 from the field. He had 1 assist and 2 turnovers. He was a minus 15 in that first quarter. In the second, third, and fourth quarter combined, he was 8-of-13 from the field, 4 assists, 1 turnover, and was a plus 29. And that's that wild pendulum swing that you get between, like, is Julius Randle the worst player in the NBA when he's not engaged, versus is Julius Randle one of the top 20 or 30 players in the NBA when he is engaged in the game? And so we've seen that from him. I mean, obviously in the Phoenix game he was engaged, and this game, besides the first quarter, he was engaged. And so I do have to give him, you know, some credit for that, is that he did get back into the game, and whether it's because of the fight or whether it's because he's had, you know, a hard time getting energized at the beginning of the game. But he's been playing really well, especially this last week. He had two really, really great games where he scored well for 20 points. He's been moving the ball. He's been trying to do a little bit of everything. Am I saying that also because I have Julius Randle on my fantasy team as well, too, so I've been watching his stats closely? Maybe. But at the same time, I mean, you have to hand it to Julius. I mean, he is starting to play more like that, what was it, that 12-0 Julius Randle run that we had before, where he was doing a little bit of everything. He was being aggressive. He's trying to mash those mismatches. I'm really, really curious to see. I think he's a player I'm most interested to see against Denver tomorrow. I want to see how Julius is going to play, because we saw how he matched up against Jokic. Granted, they didn't have Aaron Gordon in that last game, but he was going at Nikola. He was making the Joker work on defense, and he was really pushing him around, and he was playing really hard. And so are we still going to get that? Can he do that to Aaron Gordon if he has that matchup? I'm really excited to see how he's going to play.
Yeah, I agree. There's clearly like two versions of Julius Randle, and we saw both in that Pistons game. And thinking about the playoffs, I think a lot of like Knicks fans or whoever else, like, can you really trust Julius Randle in the playoffs? And certainly that's a talking point, but I just kind of... after Cat did what he did last postseason, I kind of just don't want to hear that type of stuff anymore. Like, people are bad in the playoffs until they're not. It's such a matchup specific thing and a roster specific thing that I don't really know if there are, like, I don't think, like, can't do it in the big game or can't do it in the playoffs. I really think, like, that either doesn't exist or it's, like, completely, it's much harder to find that player than people think it is. And so I just, like, they're going to need Julius Randle to be, like, All-NBA caliber or, like, All-Star caliber player, that type of Julius Randle, to win playoff series. But, and I kind of don't. When he was in New York, like, he was their number one offensive option during the playoffs, right, until Brunson got there. And, like, those were the games where people were like, can you trust Randle? Well, he's not that anymore. He's their second offensive option. And, like, the way Jaden's played and Dante, like, these are a lot better offensive players than he had during his time in New York. And it's a lot different. Like, it's a lot different system. Like, Finch and Tibbs run much different offensive systems. So I don't really think, like, those games are all that meaningful for whatever he can do in the playoffs. So, yeah, you just got to get the Randle we saw in the second half of and the one we saw all game in the Phoenix game.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I mean, I think he's been in two years. He's been in the playoffs. Last year he was injured, so he didn't play. But the two seasons before, yeah, they lost to the Hawks in the first round, and then they lost to the Cavs, I believe, in the second round two seasons ago. And so, yeah, I had that same thing as well too in my head, where he was the go-to person, obviously, until Jalen Brunson got there. But I mean, the rest of the supporting cast. I mean, you're looking at guys like RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley. I mean, the center he was playing next to was Mitchell Robinson, for as good of a rebounder as he can be. I mean, Mitchell Robinson is just a diet version of Rudy Gobert at his best, right? So there's just so many more pieces, I think, that are surrounding Julius. And I think if Julius is able to understand his role and reflect honestly on who he is, that will be the best version that we're going to see. I'm excited to see how he matches up, especially given some of the playoff matchups that we may have in hand.
Yep. All right, moving on to Prey of the Week. Who did the Wolves make their prey? I'm going to go back to the game on Friday. We already kind of did this segment a few weeks ago, but the Kevin Durant era Phoenix Suns is, it appears to be over. The Wolves swept them last year, and they swept them during the regular season this year. Far from the only team that has taken advantage of playing the Phoenix Suns this year. Now Kevin Durant is out with an ankle sprain for at least a week, and it's to be seen if there's going to be meaningful games to be played for his team when he comes back. We'll leave the speculation of the trade speculation for the offseason with him. But I mean, just like the Wolves obviously completely owned the Suns other than, like, since the playoffs last year. And but, like, looking back at Durant's career, it's just incredible how poor it's gone. And you wonder if he stays in Oklahoma City, if Harden doesn't get traded, certainly way back when, if he stays in Oklahoma City during that infamous free agency, if he makes a difference, if him and Kyrie had gone to the Knicks, easy to say now because the Knicks were a mess back then, but, like, that probably would have worked out better than what they chose. Obviously, like, they bring in Harden, the Kyrie thing blows up, the Harden, they have the whole Brooklyn thing just completely, and now the Phoenix thing is blown up. And I don't know how much to put that at the feet of Durant or not. Obviously, to some extent, he deserves blame, but, like, this is, like, a fifth percentile outcome for his career. Obviously, he gets the two titles. I think people underrate what he did in those, like, obviously, they had the super team of all super teams. Those are that maybe forever will be the 17 team. The first one was probably the best team ever. I don't really care what the regular season record says. They didn't lose. They basically didn't lose in the playoffs. That's the best team ever. And he's the best player on it. And so that gets you, if you're the best player on the best team ever, you're automatically one of the 20 best players of all time. You just are. But also he's going to go down as he didn't win a championship aside from that. I guess the Wolves fans are hoping that he's here and that the Wolves can do that for him or whatever. But yeah, just the Wolves ending along with everyone else in the NBA, ending the Kevin Durant era in Phoenix is just, I don't know. They made them their prey.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great one to pull up there. I think the whole KD thing, I mean, you could say that the Timberwolves broke the Suns. I mean, I really think that things really turn around in last year's playoff series. I mean, even going into it, you would think like, oh, yeah, the stock is up for the Suns. You know, they're promising. They're finally playing together. They have, you know, everyone together. And you would have expected them to kick the crap out of the Wolves given the regular season. And the Wolves swept them, and then we swept them again. And you could say that we broke the Wolves, or the Wolves broke the Suns, just like how the Wolves broke Luka Doncic on the Mavericks, allegedly, right?
On no, Christmas?
yeah, on Christmas, exactly, and then he got traded right after that. So, no, I'm surprised you didn't put Matt Ishbia's son, or whoever little kid that he had with him as the prey of the week as well, too, because I think at some point late in the game, Ant hit a three, and he just, like, posed, and everyone's like, oh, he's posing for A-Rod. I don't think he was looking at A-Rod. He was looking at Matt Ishbia and Matt Ishbia's kid or whatever little kid that had a Suns jersey on that was there. And that was just so savage by Ant, just seeing him absolutely just look a kid dead in the eyes and be like, your team sucks, man. You know, just classic, man. But yeah, RIP to KD on the Suns. That's most likely it for them. I agree with you. My prey of the week, though, I am going with none other than Isaiah Stewart. It felt like the Wolves were eating beef stew for dinner because on the court, I mean, Stewart has like the mental fortitude of like DeMarcus Cousins in his heyday. Like the littlest thing sets him off. Like this dude could not keep it together. And I get it. Like, oh, you're the enforcer. I'm the tough mean guy. I'm gonna punch Drew Eubanks in the locker in the tunnel. You know, like, all right, you're a big strong guy. Cool. I'm gonna chase LeBron around the court while I'm bleeding. Like, all right, cool. That's your thing. But just the way that he allows himself to get set off like a powdery keg just on a short fuse, it's just, there's no reason for it. I don't understand. Like, does he not know he's hurting his team by doing this? And like, maybe he gets a rise out of his teammates. But I mean, clearly he just lost his cool. And, you know, like you said, going from Dante yelling the fuck no three times at him, trying to get up those floaters that he missed, to, you know, him smacking the ball out of Dante's hands and then pushing him and Rudy and like pointing at them like, all right, dude, like they don't give a crap. And then he gets himself thrown out of the game while, you know, as I like to say it, he got a fistful of Big Ragu's meatballs on that one. Many of you have seen on Twitter, there's an image of him, that screenshot of him reaching at Dante's huevos there, and it was just like, dude, what are you doing, man? And so it looks like Beef Stew wants a little bit of eggs to go with it, but, you know, he's definitely the prey of the week for me because, again, at the end of the day, he's just kind of a laughing stock, and it sucks because, you know, I think there is a talented basketball player in there. I think he can, you know, do some of that rough and tough, kind of block some shots, get some rebounds, you know, finish some plays. He's pretty athletic. He was a really highly talented high school prospect, you know, out of Washington. I know him and Jaden have a bit of a relationship as well, too, both playing at University of Washington. But yeah, he just absolutely lost it. And he's most likely going to see himself losing some game checks for it as well, too, in a game that, quite frankly, doesn't really have much impact on the postseason or on the season as a whole for him against the Timberwolves on Sunday.
Yep, like we talked about earlier, we'll see what the suspensions come down. I would expect Isaiah Stewart to get the highest suspension, but I guess you never know. I feel like I'm always surprised at what they come up with for suspension, so I guess we'll just wait and see what comes there. All right. Next segment, just kind of a quick standings update or what the Wolves, where they're at. So they're currently tied for seventh with the Clippers, who they have the tiebreaker over then. So those two teams are at 32. Memphis lost on Monday night, so they're tied in the loss column with the Warriors with 31 losses. And then I think the top four have separated themselves a little bit. The Lakers and Houston are playing as we record, but there's just not enough games left, I don't think, for the Wolves to catch the Lakers. So it appears like that the top four, along with Denver, Houston, and OKC, is kind of set. But certainly, 5 through 8, they're separated by one total game. It's a toss-up. Wolves do not have the tiebreaker over Memphis or Golden State, and they do have the tiebreaker over the Clippers. I know I broke down a three-way tiebreaker, Wolves, Warriors, Clippers. The Wolves have that one. If Memphis joins that mix, I would guess, given that they're 0-2, we'll see if that becomes 0-3 or 1-2 down the stretch of the season. But adding Memphis to any sort of playoff tiebreaker would not be good for the Wolves. But ultimately, Memphis lost 6 of 7 games. So Memphis was the 2 seed for a lot of the season, and they're really, I mean, they fire their coach kind of out of nowhere. Tomorrow night's a huge game Memphis at Golden State is just a giant one. I'm not really sure who to root for. Maybe Golden State, just because like the crash out factor of Memphis and the fact that you have another game against Memphis. If you win that, you can further bury them. I don't really know. It's hard to say. Yeah, I guess what are your thoughts of the standings? And what I've kind of been targeting 48 wins as the likely get out of the play-in number. Kind of what do you think of the whole thing?
Yeah, I think when we talked a couple of weeks ago, we're looking at 48, 49 was that original thought to get that sixth seed. But it seems like just the way it's all kind of tumbling down. I mean, Steph missed a couple games, so the Warriors lost a couple games that they probably didn't need to lose. And now with the Grizzlies kind of tumbling down, like you said, they fired their coach. I mean, how bad has it had to been in that Memphis locker room for them to fire a seasoned coach that's been there for the entire duration of your star player, you know, Ja Morant's time as a Grizzly? He's done the best that he can. I mean, the Grizzlies have had a pretty successful season, I mean, all things considered, especially given all their injuries that they've been dealing with this year. And you're in a heated, like, final stretch of the week or two of the season where every game matters. Every little positioning matters for what playoff seed you're going to get, whether you're going to be the play, and they fire their head coach there. So something, again, I have no idea what's going on in there, but clearly something must have been going on. I know that there were some rumblings that was going on around the league about how maybe the players weren't happy with the way that he was running the offense. They were doing this whole little, I read this article about the little wheel offense that they were doing where it's like, you know, everything's kind of rotates to a fair equal share kind of offense. And, you know, there was rumblings that maybe Ja didn't like that. He was being kind of suppressed in the way that he was being able to be used out there. And so, yeah, I mean, Ja had a pretty good game today. They played the Celtics and they played them kind of tough. I mean, they still just never really got within real striking distance late in the game. And Boston obviously is a very, very good team. They're playing without Jaylen Brown, I think, today. But yeah, I mean, so all that said, when we talk about how many games do you think the team's going to need to get out of the play-in, I think even at this point, 47 might even be in play. And when you talk about that three-way tiebreaker to come into effect, I mean, right now I watched the Magic Clippers game earlier today too, on this Monday, and even though the Magic kind of fell apart late and the Clippers pulled away, it was one of those things where, okay, yeah, we don't want the Clippers to fall too far down, because either we beat the Clippers, because if they tie with us, we have the tiebreaker over them, or it allows that third scenario of us tying with the Warriors, that three-way tie, we will win that. So we don't want the Clippers to fall too far down. So it's almost like, okay, yeah, the Clippers won today, but that's good. They kept right on pace with us. And then, yeah, the Grizzlies, like you said, they have a tough schedule, Golden State, you mentioned, and then they only really have two, maybe three easy games, which is they have at Miami, and they have at Charlotte, and both on the road, and then they have the last game of the season against the Mavericks, which really have nothing to play for, but though AD is playing now. So other than that, they have us, they have the Nuggets, they have that tough Detroit team who maybe may or may not have some players suspended, and they have Warriors tomorrow. So I think it's going to be really, really tight, and I think 47 could potentially, in theory, do it, just given how close all those tiebreakers are.
Yeah. Just looking at Basketball Reference projected standings, they all have the Warriors, Wolves, and Clippers finishing around 47 wins. So that would point to that if that happens, all those three teams, the Wolves have the tiebreaker. Like you said, I was kind of watching, thinking about the Clippers Magic game. I was kind of like, the Wolves might want the Clippers to win because keep the Clippers around. Because my thing is like, if the Clippers pass you, like if the Clippers pass them, then they weren't going to make, like, that likely means the Warriors were also above them anyway. So the difference between 7 and 8 is negligible. But it's hard to see me, if the Wolves win the games they should, it's going to be hard for the Clippers to pass them, but tying them is possible. And basically you want to, like, the best case scenario is being tied with the Clippers at the end of the season because they went 3-0 against them. So if you tie the Grizzlies as well, now, three-way tie, Wolves, Clippers, Grizzlies. I'm going to, without looking at it, I'm going to guess that's going to go the Wolves' way. Probably would depend on if the Wolves are able to beat Memphis in their final matchup. There's this weird incentive to kind of keep the Clippers around in the sense of for the tiebreakers, but maybe that's just kind of overthinking it. At a certain point, if Memphis or Golden State starts losing games, one of which will lose tomorrow, you'll just be able to pass them up. I mean, looking at the schedule, like Tuesday night is their hardest game of the season. I'm pretty confident in saying that. It's also the Wolves' like best matchup they have with Denver. Now, we'll see what Dante and if Nas, the suspension stuff come. Denver was favoring by 2.5. I was trying to think through if that signaled what about the suspensions. To me, that signals no suspensions. Not that Vegas is always perfect on that type of stuff, but yeah, I mean, if the Wolves win tomorrow, Tuesday night, the rest of their schedule just opens wide open because they're, the two hard games they have left are against teams that are struggling mightily right now. Milwaukee doesn't have one of their two best guys, and Memphis has been, like, Ja's been in and out of the lineup the entire season. And then you have four games remaining against just teams that would rather you win the game than themselves. So Tuesday night against Denver is a huge game, both for obviously the standings, but also to kind of get one final look, like thinking about playoff matchups. Do you want to face Denver? Obviously, the matchup seems to be in the Wolves' favor, but ultimately you're also playing the best player in the world. So pros and cons there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head with a lot of these things. I mean, the easiest way is, right, just win out. Win out, finish even as freaking, who knows, a fifth seed, right? That means win out and you'll take care of, you don't have to worry about tiebreakers. You don't have to worry about the other teams. The second one, like you said, three-way tiebreaker, that's great. And then once you throw even Memphis falling in, that's kind of like the third way in. I don't have the math on that four-way tiebreaker as well, too. The Memphis Grizzlies do have obviously good division record, but I think the four-way tie depends on the record between the teams, right? Between all four
of those
teams.
Break down that four-way tiebreaker. The only problem with looking at it now is that, like, Memphis and Golden, maybe it's worth looking at it after tomorrow's Memphis-Golden State game, but, like, Memphis and Golden State play each other, the Clippers and Warriors play each other, and the Wolves and Grizzlies play each other. So as far as, like, records, like, the tiebreaker is still yet to be determined.
Yeah, things are still moving. I mean, I looked at the Warriors' schedule, and I just want to put this up there, since the Warriors are technically the team that we're most likely trying to bypass here, is that they have Memphis tomorrow, and then they also have at LA 2 days later, so at the Lakers, and then they play the Nuggets at home, and they play the Rockets at home. They have a gimme, I guess, if you want to call it that, against Phoenix, and they have San Antonio and Portland. Those are three easy ones. They finish the season against the Clippers. So I would say that they probably have the hardest schedule, them or the Grizzlies probably have the hardest schedule to finish the season. So yeah, you know, it's really hard to project. I'm not going to live and die with every single night of, you know, standings watching. But I think that for a lot of people to say that, oh no, that's it, the Wolves are a play-in team, it's like, yeah, sure, you can believe that maybe that's the talent level that we're at, but we're so far from locked into the play-in. There's so much room for things to still kind of shake out.
Yep. And like you said, the biggest thing is just win. If you go, obviously winning out almost certainly gets you there. It honestly, now that Memphis, actually, I believe, yeah, if you win out, I can confidently, the Wolves technically control their own destiny because they play Memphis. If they win out, Memphis would drop down. Even if Memphis and the Clippers won every single one of their other games, the Wolves have that three-way tiebreaker. So
yeah,
if the Wolves mathematically, if they go 7-0 these last seven games, they'll be in the playoffs. But even 6-1 almost certainly gets it done. And 5-2, I think we kind of agree, most likely gets it done, but not 100% there. And there's even an outside chance at 4-3 getting it done, although I'm kind of dubious of that.
Yeah.
All right. Two words. Mine, based on the Pistons game, weirdest team. Just slow start going into a fight on the court, into the stands, and then kind of pulling away late. Just truly insane stuff, and just the, like we just talked about, the standings of it all are just insane. And it's unfortunate, like, if you turn around, they had two close losses to Memphis and three close losses to the Warriors. You turn one of each of those games around against each teams and the Wolves are, like, locked into the five seed at this point in the season. So that's, or even if you just flip that Indiana game, the Obi Toppin game, the Wolves would be in a much better spot, but that's the bed they've made for themselves.
Yeah, it's a weird team for sure. My two words, in honor of Rudy's recent hot streak, and I'm going to go French for this one. My two words is deja vu. It seems like we've been here a dozen times this season already. I mean, a poor stretch and a losing streak, followed by a great stretch and a great win and a mini win streak as well, too. So to me, Ryan, this just tells me that this is all just a glitch in the matrix and that we're all just in a 2K simulation right now. And it's going to be one of those things where it seems like when you simulate seasons in 2K, if you ever play like your mind league mode or whatever, there always seems to be like four or five teams all with the same record at the end. It's like, well, that never happens in real life. And it seems like we're kind of headed for that direction right now where we have literally four teams that are all looking like they might have the same record by the end of the season. So yeah, it's a bit of deja vu where it's like, man, didn't we just do this? Where it's like, oh, the Wolves have turned things around. No, they didn't. the Wolves just turned things around. No, they didn't. So, yeah, I think that also speaks to, like you said, weirdest team. It is an extremely weird team, the way that the season even started, the way the season has gone, and the way that the season's finishing right now.
Yep. But kind of I agree with you that it's just like it's hard to count on anything with this team. But honestly, they're like behind the scenes numbers continue to get better and better. They're now ninth on offense for the whole season, sixth on defense. Both of those numbers, if you filter to like the last 10 games, are even better. Last 10 games, they're fifth in offense, eighth in defense, fourth in net rating. And so compare that to being 10th, sixth, and sixth in net rating for the whole season. Like, that's just a team that projects like they're so far ahead of Denver. They're way ahead of Golden State. They're the Lakers are barely an above average team according to net rating. Like, if that's indication.
I hate to interrupt, but that's just what's so weird about it, right? It's mm-hmm. so weird that we're at that record, but also when you look at the Lakers or the Warriors, like they are also a completely different team than they were like a couple months ago too, right? So it's just like such a weird season, a weird team. It's like I don't know how to understand any of it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, like the Warriors and Lakers, especially, like, their numbers. Like, if I just filter Warriors' last 10 games, they're tied in that rate, or they're tied in, let's see, yeah, they're fifth in, sorry, I'm struggling, seventh in net rating, which is much better. But, like, the Lakers are, they continue to not have good That's underneath true. Numbers. Last 10 games, they're 21st in net rating. That's with, I mean, they've had Luka and LeBron that the whole time. So, I mean, it's kind of a battle. If net rating is any indication of what the Wolves can do, they're going to be a shot at the Western Conference Finals. But it also means that OKC is going to throttle everyone. Which I saw a stat today that they went 29-1 against the Eastern Conference, which is just like that's a record. 27-3 was the previous record going against an opposing conference. The last team to do that was the Durant Warriors I was talking about. OKC's insane. So if the regular season's any indication, then we're all trying to kind of plan for second. But as we all know, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I was like so curious to see what our record was against the Eastern Conference last year for the Wolves. And I think if I'm doing the math correctly, it looks like the Wolves are lost 11 games, I think, to the East, and they won 19 games to the East. So they clearly did not have that gear that the Thunder had this year versus the Eastern Conference teams. But yeah, I think that is a thing where, you know, the Giant is still sitting there, which is the Thunder. And it's like it's their season until it's not, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs. But it's going to be a really exciting finish. I mean, I think you can't. You know, I can finally, I feel like I talked about fantasy basketball earlier, but I can finally take my fantasy goggles off and just watch the games now, not worry about like how many rebounds is Rudy Gobert getting tonight. and really just enjoy like standings watching right now. Just kind of enjoy the ride. I mean, I think even if things don't break right for the Wolves, I'm not going to go into the postseason and think, all right, well, we're screwed. It's like, no, we finish as a seventh or eighth seed. And all right, cool. Like, let's see it. Then let's see what happens. Cause you know, this team has proved that they're unpredictable.
Yep. I think that's kind of an important point. Try to enjoy the ride because in roughly a month, potentially, we won't have any more basketball to watch, or hopefully 2 months, but obviously we'll see what happens there. But yeah, it'll be interesting, and I'll be back later this week for another pod for everyone. But for Leo, I'm Ryan. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thanks all. Get home. Drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!